This town needs an enemy.
What are you?
I'm Batman. I can't wait to show you Munson's toy.
Tell me.
That's not close.
Do you bleed?
The Batman?
You, in the car. Part of the Batman.
Hello, and welcome to Rain Man Digital's exclusive Batman fan show, Wayne Talk. I'm your host, Paul, and with me, as pretty much always, is Mr. Michael Flores.
What up?
And today, we are going to be continuing our metal discussion. Last time, we kind of went over all of the Dark Knights, their various origins and attributes, powers and personalities. And that was fun. I liked that.
Yeah, but, it's a good discussion. A lot of good feedback from the listeners, too.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So today we are going to be continuing more main story than the last show, but still not a solid numbered issue yet.
No.
We've got the Gotham Resistance, a 4-part series of tie-in issues that take place in a time gap between the end of issue 2 and the beginning of issue 3.
It's filler story, right?
I mean, absolutely. But I feel like this is tie-ins done right.
Yes.
Because a lot of times there's a lot of ways tie-ins can be bad.
Mm-hmm.
You can just be completely unnecessary information that the reader immediately regrets having spent money on.
Right.
You can't be like overly necessary information because then they have to include that in the main story because there is the risk that any tie-in, not every reader is going to read. So
yeah.
Like you can't put the juicy details in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're stuck in this like limbo of like, what do you do? And I feel like this 4-part little series was a fun adventure. It was,
it felt like a true spinoff series.
I mean, yeah, there were almost immediately you hit some shit and it's kind of like odd, but you're still having a good time.
Yeah, I agree. And I do like what you said, that it's a spinoff series or a side series or filler series, one-offs done right, because that's something growing up in the 90s, you know, being a big comic book guy in the 90s, that was a problem that I came up against all the time.
Yeah,
because in the 90s, I think most people can agree the stories weren't as great. It was kind of the dark years for comic book readers. They weren't the best stories. They were trying all types of new things, gimmicks. And I mean,
even now with, basically every large publisher has like 2 to 3 major events that happen every year throughout the year. And, you know, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but like Marvel's are pretty bad.
Yeah.
Specifically the tie-ins.
Yeah. And you feel like, you were cheated and kind of tricked into buying this epic storyline. And because I'm an idiot, I do fall for it every time. Like, ooh, the story's going to continue here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, the story didn't really continue here. This is a side story that I really didn't need
to
know.
With a different writer and a bad artist.
Yes. It's like the C Squad filling in for some filler stories that you don't need. But with this Resistance storyline, part 4, I almost would feel like I lost out. Now that I know how much story they gave us in this 4-part series, I would almost feel like the overall metal story is, I would not know the whole story.
Absolutely. Especially the way that this ends when we get to that point in the actual core metal series and you see that, you know, that thing, it's just more impactful because you know where it came from and how we got there.
Yeah, agreed.
So as a whole, this is, what is this? It's 4 series. It was, you have them sitting in front of you, right?
Yeah, it was Gotham Resistance part 1 takes place in Teen Titans. Number 12, Gotham Resistance part 2 takes place in Nightwing number 29. And part 3 takes place in Suicide Squad number 26. And the finale part 4 takes place in Green Arrow number 32.
Right. Yeah. The Green Arrow issue was the one that I couldn't remember. So,
yeah. And
just as far as anyway. Yeah. Go.
No, I was just going to say, interestingly, though, even though. Oh, man. I mean, because when you're dealing with 4 when you're dealing with one storyline, dealing, you know, going into four different issues, sometimes you run up against a very convoluted, jarring story that's not very cohesive. But I feel like what they did with these issues, they found a way to connect the story. The meat or the thread of the story is definitely and what it should be.
I want to say that is a testament to Scott Snyder, James Tynion, and Joshua Williamson, and, you know, anybody else involved that I am forgetting, but their ability to kind of plan out and weave together this tapestry, because those four issues aren't even, there's at least two, if not three to four different writers involved in that.
Yeah.
It's definitely not just the same, you know, the same guy writing all those issues.
That's some synergy right there. You and I both read a lot of comic books, and that synergy is just not there for a lot of these crossovers, as we just said.
Some of them you don't see it in issue to issue, but absolutely not in these crossovers.
But it was smart, because that's one question that I had going into these titles. I'm like, okay, well, this is a Batman story, right? This Metal is a Batman-centric story, so why are we delving into... Teen Titans would make sense, and Nightwing would make sense, but then we're dealing with Suicide Squad, Green Arrow, and they all have their own current storylines happening as well at the same time. So the way they bring it all together, I thought was very fitting, making sure that Damian Wayne and Nightwing are front and center. They're the two characters that keep everything together, that are like the bulk of the story, right? Or the meat of the story.
Yeah.
And I think overall that's smart to do that, to keep them front and center.
Absolutely. Even still, the like Suicide Squad, I know is always a handful of characters, but the two that leap to my mind directly are Harley and Croc. And I mean, those are both Gotham villains. So.
Yeah. But even that, the way they did that with, I guess, having some type of Gotham pride, you know, which I totally dug that, because I'm not a big Killer Croc fan. I'm not, like, I don't hate him. You know what? I'm kind of indifferent about Killer Croc.
It depends on how he's written, because a lot of times he's either a very supporting role and like doesn't really offer anything himself, or he's just like an outright retard. And he's like, why is he on the page? And that's just the way that he's written a lot of times. So it's nice to see him. Just, I don't know, not poorly represented.
Right. Because I chuckled a few times, not because it was stupid, but because of like, I kind of dig it. So how do you want to do with this episode? Do you want to go issue by issue and kind of talk about the pros and cons, talk about our favorites? What's your plan for this discussion?
Probably just, flow through the story. If you've got anything that you particularly liked or didn't like, you know, we'll talk about it when we get there. And
cool.
Otherwise, just general setup. The Batman Who Laughs gives, he's got a series of, what is it, six cards. Because, why wouldn't they be cards that are charged with these, otherworldly metals? The wielder of the card kind of gains not unlimited power, but like way more power than they're used to having. And they can use that to literally shape reality. So the Batman Who Laughs breaks into Arkham and he gives the Riddler, Mr. Freeze, Firefly, Poison Ivy, the Mad Hatter, and Bane each one of these cards, and then kind of sets them loose in Gotham City. So the Riddler immediately, because I guess why not, creates an enormous maze, like a labyrinth within and around the city. And then the other five kind of just post up in different corners, different sections. And the core of the story is everybody showing up to this labyrinth and trying to work together to work their way through it. I mean, it goes straight like fantasy at times. Everybody's got, borderline suits of armor and like swords and axes, and they're fighting frost giants. And it's
out there.
It's an adventure, man.
Yeah, it's definitely out there. But I love the how they created, what did you call it? The
labyrinth?
The labyrinth. I mean, that's definitely a throwback. I mean, in fact, they might have even used it. And I just read these recently and I can't remember now, but it's very much Dante's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, the different levels
of hell.
You've got to progress through one to get to the next. You can't just like outright skip one.
Dude, and that's fucking cool. I love that shit. So when they mentioned Dante's Inferno, I was like, yes, that's exactly what you guys are doing. That's exactly the vibe that I got with these different nightmare like levels that each of these Batman villains are creating, their own versions of this weird warped reality of nightmarish proportions. But the only thing I didn't like, because it felt too much like a customizable collecting card game.
Okay.
And the metal cards. It was a little silly, like especially at the end of the final issue, and you have the Batman Who Laughs. He has like the cards in his hand. Mm-hmm. It looks like he's trying to collect them. It was like a Pokemon or, you know, was it called Magic the Gathering game? Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like overall. I don't know if they were trying to do that. Like, hey, collect them all and you have the ultimate power.
I mean, you know, if you're in possession of these things and you give them to some people, you're gonna want to get them back.
So it was good. I liked it. It was cool.
So I mean, there were a lot of characters in it.
Did you feel like So did you feel like the villains themselves, the go-to Batman villains, Riddler, Poison Ivy, Bane, and who was the other one?
Riddler, Mr. Freeze, Firefly, Poison Ivy, Mad Hatter, Bane.
Okay. Did you feel like they were squandered a bit and they were simply there to kind of set the theme of each portion of this labyrinth?
For sure.
Okay.
Because even just reading the list, it's six villains and we had four issues.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe a little bit too much time was spent on Riddler and Mr. Freeze, because that was like the entire first issue was Riddler.
Yeah.
And like pretty much the whole second issue was Mr. Freeze. And then the third issue, you jump right into that like Firefly Mad Max madness. And then you just kind of bounce right through like Poison Ivy, Mad Hatter, and Bane. But because even by the time they get to like Ivy, she is not the real threat because other things have happened by then. So, we start out and we've got the Titans, current team being Damian with Goliath, his incredible giant flying bat lion thing, Raven, Starfire, Aqualad, and Beast Boy. And naturally some shit's going down in Gotham. So Damian wants to go home. But he's also Damian, so he won't let anybody else go with him, at least once they find the labyrinth.
Yeah.
So he's got this like whole team of like helpful pals. And he's like, "Now you wait outside. I'm gonna go into this giant fucking maze." And he does.
And that kind of kicks off the entire story, which
it is. Yeah, that's literally the beginning.
And I, you know, off air, I said that I don't dig Damian Wayne. And I even said, hey, is that like a...
You just
that,
said it on air, too.
Is that blasphemous? Like, should I say that on a Batman show? But the more you think about his story and what they did, specifically in this first issue here that took place in Titans number 12, you're dealing with a teenager, right? You're dealing with a person who, I mean, even if he doesn't accept it, he lives under a giant shadow.
Yeah.
Well, period. Yeah. And, I mean...
And he is specifically in Titans as well. He like is the de facto leader because he made himself the de facto leader. Like nobody even really likes him all that much, but like he will not tolerate anyone not following his orders. So he very much like maintains that attitude because that is the attitude that he has in that series throughout most of this story.
Yeah. And it just puts a spotlight on his insecurity and the fact that he knows he lives under this shadow. And that's one thing that I liked, that by the end of this entire story arc that I went back, you know, and thought in my mind, like, all right, you know what? Issue number one and what they tried to do with Damian, I think worked. Again, it makes sense to who he is as a teenager and understanding who he is in these stories. He's a person who definitely struggles with a lot of insecurity. A lot. And that makes a lot of sense when you realize who his father is, Batman. He has a lot to live up to. And I think that's a big weight on his shoulder. And I mean, and
not like just his father, because who is his mother and who is his grandfather?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a heavy weight. So I guess his attitude makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, because he is a teenager, that's exactly how a teenager would react. Mm-hmm. Constantly very argumentative, even when someone's trying to help him. He makes it clear that, hey, I don't need help. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I said. I'm the boss here.
I'm doing it because I was already planning to do it, not because you suggested it.
Yeah. That's exactly something he said. I was like, that's the kind of stuff you said when you were like 12 or 13 years old. And me being, you know, a 39, 40 year old man, I'm like, oh my God, I want to smack this kid. But it makes perfect sense. I mean, when you first off, understanding how old he is and then understanding his story and everything he's dealing with, especially knowing that possibly his father, Batman, is the very one responsible for everything that's happening. And now he has to deal with that guilt. You know, yeah. Man, everyone's looking at me and my father's the one who did this. And now I have to pick up the pieces. So there's a lot there. And honestly, I think that's one of the smartest things about this series is putting that pressure on Damian, because in many ways it makes a character that I never, never, ever cared about. It made him interesting to me because they were justified reasons behind the way he acted rather than just, I'm a snot-nosed brat and my dad's Batman, bitches. You have to listen to me.
Right.
Now suddenly you can.
It's so much of it is. It's like, it's not even referencing like, oh, my dad's Batman, so I'm important. Mm-hmm. It's like, I am the best thing that there ever was. Also, I guess my dad's Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. So at least in this story arc, starting in this issue, you can begin to understand the way he acts. And that, from a story aspect, is fantastic. You want your characters to pop and you want them to be broken. You want them to have issues, but justifiable issues. And also, you got to have some empathy. You want to be empathetic towards these characters. You want to understand them. And if you just have a character who's unjustifiably an asshole, you're never going to get behind their story.
Right. Which is why a lot of people, honestly, I'd say it's probably damn near 50-50, feel the same way you did just in general about Damian. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did not like him, and some people stuck around and he grew on them and now they love him. Some people loved him right off the bat and some people were like, fuck this kid. And yeah, they just kind of stopped following him and they still actively hate him. Honestly. Yeah. We're just about done with the first issue. Like literally Damian goes into the labyrinth, like immediately bumps into Green Arrow. They very quickly bump into Harley and Killer Croc as well. Beat Riddler, which is kind of anticlimactic.
Very.
He'd be at the center, but yeah. not super important. And they're on to the next area, which is Mr. Freeze's. Upon entering that, they meet up with Nightwing and they're confronted by a frost giant. But now we got Nightwing. And he is, I would say, like just as big a focus at this point as Damian is, but in like a very different way, because a lot of they're both very clearly struggling. They have a lot of mental anguish. They're not doing great with the situation, with what's going on in the city, what's going on in the world, what's going on with Bruce, just all of it. It's not great specifically for them, his two lovely sons. And while Damian is, you know, very loud and I want to say confident, but it's like the, you know, the fake confident.
Yeah. It's insecure confidence.
Yeah, yes. Like all
overcompensating.
All of Nightwing is very much like in his own head, constantly thinking about this and remembering that and struggling with how much of a role he himself is also playing in this.
Being a character that knows a lot of what's going on and yeah. Now that he sees what's happening.
He's been introduced to at least two, if not three, of those metals involved in the mantling. So, you know, he's thinking to himself, you know, if anything, I mean, already bad shit's going down with Bruce, but if anything like excessively bad were to happen, should he die, then, you know, Dick is just going to be right next in line to assume that position to help you know, to unwillingly help the evil continue.
And that's really what I loved about this issue. The fact that he knew that. And they didn't need to spell it out. Thank God. They don't need to spell things
Absolutely,
out.
Absolutely. Because it's so much. It's you know, one of the metals that he was subjected to had happened pretty early on in Rebirth. One of them was way back in Batman in very early New 52. So, yes, as you said, it was nice to just this happened moving forward.
It worked, man. I like the parallel that between, and that's kind of what you're describing, the parallel between Damian Wayne and Nightwing. They're both struggling in very different ways.
Yes.
One's a little more overt and obvious. The other one's struggling with all of his thoughts, which is Nightwing. He knows so much of what's happening, but he wasn't able to start putting those pieces together and tell the events that's transpired. Now he suddenly realizes, okay, I kind of understand what Batman was saying. He was warning me about these things. And now he is seeing visions. He suddenly knows that the part he has to play in this grand story is much bigger than any of us had expected. We had all assumed this was 100% about just Batman. But if we're dealing with Batman, we're dealing with the Batman family. And we find out that Nightwing is far more intrinsically tied to what's going on as well. Some type of weapon possibly is what they allude to. Definitely. Yeah,
that is a heavily following up on a story from Scott Snyder's early Batman in the New 52 with the Court of Owls and the Talons, these undying assassins. One of the Talons was Dick Grayson's grandfather. And Dick Grayson, prior to Bruce, you know, acquiring him because he was orphaned by the circus. He actually, like, all of that was set in motion by the Court of Owls so that they could get him and make him a Talon. And Bruce just happened to intercept him before they could.
And who wrote those stories?
Snyder.
Of course. Man, everything's connected, man. So what's going to happen when Snyder decides to retire from Batman? Is this ever going to happen?
Hard reboot.
You think so?
I don't know. But so I don't know. It was cool. It was good.
But again, that's okay. So let me circle back just for a second to Nightwing. So
because you weren't done making your point and I forgot the one I was just going on. So we'll see if we can get back there.
It's all right. So with the struggle that we have Nightwing going through, again, it works in parallel with what's happening with Damian with his introduction to the storyline and the Titans issue. But now by the end of the Nightwing issue, we start seeing how they're going to have to work together as brothers. Mm-hmm. And I like it because he is the first one to actually be able to connect and soften Damian.
Oh, absolutely.
And I like
Damian loves Dick. Like that's a big thing.
He loves Dick.
He loves Dick.
Don't we all love Dick at times? No?
Most times.
Yeah. Most
times. There are very few situations where I don't just love Dick.
Yeah, I love Dick as well. It's good. Good times.
But yes.
Usually Damian, girthy Dick.
Damian is absolutely I like long, slender Dick.
Oh.
Tall, slender Dick. Oh. I'm sorry. I went too far with it.
I like Black Dick.
Tall, slender.
Is there a Black Dick out there?
There is actually. Currently in Nightwing, the series is very bad. And there are four Nightwings and one of them is black.
So there's four Dicks and one's a Black Dick.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yep. So, but throwing back to something you said probably 5 minutes ago at this point, you know, dealing with Batman, dealing with Batman's sons, all of that. But specifically dealing with Batman, because the villain of the piece, you know, the orchestrator of all or most of this is, you know, obviously with help from Barbados, but it is the Batman Who Laughs, who is Batman. So, you know, everything has been planned. Everything has been calculated. And like that's. It's super cool as a reader, but you know, for these fictional characters, it's got to be terrifying knowing that this man that you know so well and also don't know at all because that is Batman, the equivalent but insane is the one orchestrating the entire situation you're trying to navigate and live through.
Now, at this point, does Nightwing and Robin know who the ultimate villain is? Not Barbados, but the Batman Who Laughs. Do they know who he is up at this point in the game? Because that's
no,
the, that's,
because they technically all of the Dark Knights just came through that portal, at, you know, a day ago.
Yeah.
And then the Batman Who Laughs handed out these cards, as we already stated. Okay. The Labyrinth popped up, okay. And that's what drew everybody to Gotham to see what was going on.
Because I know in Resistance Part 3, Harley has a connection there. And then you suddenly realize, okay, they do know. But I don't think in Part 2 they actually know that. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and reread some of these. But setting that aside for the moment, I mean, dude, their enemy... They're looking for their father. How poetic is that? They're looking for their father. They don't know what happened to him. They don't know what he's done. And as their journey takes them farther and farther into this labyrinth, through this Dante's Inferno, they will find their father.
They will find realistically like seven nightmare versions of their father.
I mean, that is good. That is good. That was my biggest takeaway from these first two issues. They're looking for their father, but a version of their father is already watching them, plotting everything out. No, their enemy knows everything about them. Every personal, intimate moment, he knows everything. That's good. That's really good storytelling.
It's a good story, man.
Yeah, I dig it, man.
So I think last couple tidbits just before we move on to the third issue, things to know is I guess the remainder of the Suicide Squad, Deadshot, Enchantress, Captain Boomerang, and El Diablo show up also outside the labyrinth. So they and the remaining, you know, everyone who isn't Damian of the Teen Titans are all just kind of hanging out, chilling outside the labyrinth.
Are they possessed? Is that what happens?
So that is what happens, because okay. the Damian Crow shows up with a small group of other crows. They attack that Teen Titans Suicide Squad super team. And basically beat the hell out of them and like take control. They fall under the Batman Who Laughs power, which is absolutely a thing that he can do and is still currently doing in ongoing series to various superheroes.
Is it clear how they do it? I understand some
currently
form.
No, but okay. I believe that between his own follow-up miniseries and the current series that's going on where he is doing this to more heroes, I'm sure that it is explained.
Okay.
And we'll find the answer someday.
Yeah.
But moving on to the third issue. I mean, it jumps right in, and they're on a bus, like Mad Maxing through Firefly's domain.
Pretty cool way to open up an issue.
Yeah, it looks great. It's very short because Harley drives them straight off a cliff, but it is a very nice opening. And I think an easy way to kind of explain why they are or are not dealing with certain, you know, characters that we know exist.
I also like the shift in tone as well. Going from a Nightwing title into a Suicide Squad title, you also get the tonal shift as well. Mm-hmm. The fact that it opens up with him in the bus and Harley's in control. I mean, it's just a great way to have the story still.
You got her, Croc, Damian, Nightwing, and Green Arrow. How the hell is she the one who got to drive?
I don't know. Maybe hotties get to drive. I don't know. Is that how it works?
I guess.
In the world of Batman.
I mean, because like literally even Damian could have been driving. We saw him driving that tank in issue number 2, like of actual metal. So anyone but her, she did not need to be driving.
I think the big takeaway for me on this one is, okay, first off, this is where, in my opinion, we go from setup to full on story. The first two issues were setting the groundwork.
I mean, obviously you're making a point, but I'm just going to interject with like, in what way? Because I thought that this issue was not like bad per se, because it was like it kept your attention, but mm-hmm. there were more like villains and threats and just like, hey, here's this thing. I thought that this issue was just kind of chock full of those.
I agree. I feel like this is where the story started to solidify itself for me. Yes, in terms of actual narrative, it's a bit light, but we come face to face with the Batman Who Laughs. We see who the enemy is. They understand who the enemy is. And from a Suicide Squad title perspective, I felt like this was an interesting way to continue that story. There's a tonal shift. Yes, the story is very cohesive. Like we said at the top of the show, it isn't jarring. But because we're dealing with the Suicide Squad and Harley Quinn as the lead of this title, what comes with Harley? Chaos. You know, right, a chaotic tone. And that's what they were able to accomplish. It's very... It's not. Sometimes stories don't need to state things. It's just the way it's scripted out.
Okay.
And I felt like the way this was scripted out by who wrote this one?
This one, I mean,
Rob Williams. Does that sound right?
Is that the first name?
Yeah.
Then yeah.
Hold on. Let me make sure, because I really dug it. Yeah, Rob Williams. I feel like the way he scripted this out fit exactly how a Suicide Squad title should be while continuing the storyline from the previous two issues. And that's what I dug about it. And also it made it personal for Harley.
This is her
title. And I loved seeing, I didn't like how they ended it for her, but I do like that she came face to face with her puddin'. It made so much sense. It was a question I had from the very beginning. I'm like, okay, does she know who this is? This is Batman slash Joker, the best of both worlds. Harley's all about him. Like, how is this going to play out?
And her whole, I mean, okay, so building up to the moment, you know, they're driving through Firefly's thing, whole realm. They drive off a cliff. They're confronted by Ivy, then confronted by the Batman Who Laughs possessed Starfire. They run away from that. They're dealing with the Damian Crow a little bit. They run away from that. Croc, I mean, basically implies that he's going to sacrifice himself so that everyone can get away because this Damian Crow is like that much of a threat. They run into the Mad Hatter. They run into the White Rabbit. They run into Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And Harley has a line where she has like a little panic attack. And she's just like thinking to herself, like, this whole situation, everything that's unfolding is very Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like not okay with it at all.
She's terrified.
Yes. Yeah.
Which obviously in this current issue, she's already kind of come to terms with her relationship with Joker. I guess you could assume that. I am not currently reading the Suicide Squad title, so I can only surmise that.
But you get the idea that is established in like her kind of standalone series. But that is an established, like, she don't like him no more. That's a few years now.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I really dug, is because it made it personal for her. The fact that she said everything's, what is it, chaotic, everything's crazy, sinister and evil, I am paraphrasing here, mm-hmm. and she's all, it all feels like him.
Yeah.
And I thought that was powerful, especially because this is a different Harley. This is the Harley that has been romanticized, you know, the relationship between Joker and Harley.
And she still knows him, and, you know, to briefly touch on... but not drag through, you know, toxic relationships
and all of that.
She was with him. She knows how he is. She knows how he is at his worst. And so she recognizes and is afraid of things like this.
Yes.
It's warranted fear. And I liked it. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, obviously she knew she was in a relationship she shouldn't be in. That's why she's not in it. So when all of these things start coming, you know, when she starts getting all these vibes that she ran from, that she had, I guess, I'm assuming overcame these issues. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly they're embedded into the very fabric of Gotham City and what's going on with what's going on. So to have that moment of realization and also the temptation, because she was tempted. She was tempted.
Now, this is, I want to say that the scene that you're talking about where she actually comes like face to face with him.
Yeah.
That is in part 4, not three.
Oh, my bad.
But doesn't matter because we're in part four now. But as far as like my notes, I literally wrote that. I don't remember what he said or what he did, but he like literally seduces her. Like he just shows up and she's like smitten.
Yeah. Well, dude, and let's talk about toxic relationships for a second. I don't want to get preachy, but dude, this is reality. It's no different than alcoholism. When you have someone who's broken, like Harley, you are drawn to people like that. And she may have had a strong moment where she can run away from that person. But sometimes when you become or come face to face with that individual again, this is reality. Well, I'm speaking from experience. We've all been there in these relationships. Maybe we shouldn't have been in. Maybe we've been in them too long. And then you see that person again. You're like, forget about all that. I remember why I like you. And that's kind of what they were doing.
Even a step beyond that, this isn't the same person. This is, you know, her type or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
It's the next nightmare that falls right into her cookie cutter mold of what's going to catch her eye.
Right. Exactly. So I thought that was the strongest moment in these last two issues. There's a lot going on. Not saying there isn't, because there is, especially with Nightwing. I feel like Damian's story comes to a head. And I feel like at the end of this issue four, I finally like Damian. It took four issues. And I finally understood this kid's problem. Nightwing. I want to read his title now after this. I'm not reading the current Nightwing title. I'm not reading the current Suicide Squad title. So this whole marketing gimmick has done its trick on me because I want to go back, especially because the artwork is fucking amazing in these last two issues. Now, who's the gentleman that does the art for the cover for Suicide Squad really fast going back
that,
to?
That was Stepan Sajic.
Stepan Sajic.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
It's spelt weird, but
amazing work.
He's good.
And he didn't just do the cover work in Resistance Part 3 in the Suicide Squad title, but he also did the overall story.
Yeah, like the entire interior. And while, you know, you can see a difference of, you know, they're ink colored, I guess, with inks and et cetera, and not just like painted like all the covers are.
Right.
It is still like recognizable and pleasant to look at. Even the specifically like the speech bubbles in books that he does, the like the individual speaking, the line will like squiggle away from their mouth different ways and stuff. It's not your traditional thing. That's all like just his presentation. And a lot of stuff, I think at this point, a lot of the stuff that he does art for, he also writes. So he's an adventure to have.
I really dig his work because that's one of my hardest. I want to say one of my biggest issues with modern comics is I feel like they're moving away from. I don't want to say true art. That sounds so shitty and pretentious, but
I mean, so what is your definition of true art? Like, what is the thing that you want to see more of and the thing that you're not seeing enough of?
I feel like a lot of the artwork in comics today are very digital. It doesn't look like someone was there sweating over a easel writing, you know, and drawing out every part. And I know they don't do that anymore. I get it. It's technology.
I mean, it depends on who that like Batman Beyond ish Sean Murphy 2-page spread. That's what that guy does.
Yeah.
And that's why you were gushing over that. So,
yeah. So that's what I dig. And I feel like, yes, there's a mixture to Sajak's. Is that how you say his name? Sajak?
Sajic.
Sajic. I feel like there's a good combination of the two. A little digital, but also there's some artistry behind his work. I feel like all the colors really pop. So even the chosen colors that him and the writer go with, I feel like overall it just works.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a big way. It's medieval looking, has a medieval vibe to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like specifically the covers, because that is a reference to the armory that they get to and all of the armor everybody kind of throws on and how just ridiculous and over the top it gets from there.
I mean, if you were to cut out some of these panels, it almost looks like it's from a splice from an old school comic or animation strip. Like it looks like a cartoon.
Yeah,
like something you watch on Saturday mornings or some animation on the DC Universe app. I mean, that's how well drawn these panels are.
Just clean and like especially faces. That's kind of like his thing.
Yeah, the clarity. Yeah.
He's really good at like conveying an emotion or a feeling through like a single panel face.
So you'd like him too then?
Yeah, yeah.
He's good.
So at this point, you know, we're in the fourth book. Mr. Terrific has joined everybody to whatever avail that is. And they're really just kind of, everything's coming to a head. Nightwing has been having these nightmares about this, this machine that everyone is kind of strapped and enslaved to. But he doesn't really know like what it is or, you know, what exactly is happening. Everyone's just moving, trying to get to the center of the labyrinth because you've already come this far. So they get attacked by the Damien Crow again because he is the most persistent little bastard there is. And everyone kind of gets split up. That's when Harley kind of comes face to face with the Batman Who Laughs and she is instantly smitten, at which point she is instantly captured.
And I don't know if I was grossed out or turned on when the Batman Who Laughs sticks his tongue out for Harley to, I'm assuming, to suck on it. I mean, that was disturbing. But at the same time, I'm like, strangely erotic as well. I think I might want to throw up because I like it. I don't know, but
I'm gross.
I'm disgusting. I'm going to go jump off a cliff. But yeah, dude, I keep cutting you off. Sorry.
No, you're good. I mean, I'm just like ramming through the story here, but we do get to an important thing for metal overall going forward. So part of that armory, you know, the whole weapons and swords and shields and weird medieval armor that they looted previously. Green Arrow is about to fire the last arrow that he had from the armory. The armory is actually a Court of Owls armory, and a lot of the armor and weapons in there are made of some of these fancy metals. Imagine that. So he's got his last arrow, and they're trying to just take out this Damien Crow because he's a piece of shit. He fires the arrow, and the Damien Crow whips legit Damien into position himself because, you know, if you're fighting yourself, you know what you're doing. I feel like nobody ever thinks of that.
No.
Like when you're fighting an enemy that like literally is you, there's a good chance that they know what you're doing or what you're planning.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a fictional situation. I've never experienced fighting evil me, but you know, it makes sense that they know exactly what you're doing and your plan backfires. So the Crow Damien grabs regular Damien, whips him around, and Green Arrow's arrow goes right into his chest, just right into his whole body. And that was a startle. How'd you feel? Were you expecting that in any way?
No, I thought they were going to kill him. I thought they were going to get him. I don't know. I just thought that was going to be the end. And that was going to be the way they kind of created a somewhat or a bit of a conclusion for this story. Like, I figured they needed to end this story some way with maybe a bit of a positive, and I thought that would be it. But no, I was wrong. There was no positive about this, except the fact that they...
You get a sweet little, like, you know, God of War or, you know, whatever, choose your poison.
Yeah.
But, you know, Damien mans the fuck up. Well, he always is. He's a tough kid. Like, that's never in question.
Yeah.
But he...
He acts like a bitch, but he ain't a bitch.
He grabs the arrow and shoves it through all the way through himself and through into the Crow Robin standing behind him.
That's something Batman would do. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I totally dug that.
Badass as hell.
Yeah.
And again, because this arrow was from the Court of Owls armory and it was made out of that fancy metal, it critically injures. I think it might have actually killed him. The Damien Crow.
Oh, did it?
I'm fairly certain. I don't know if we see him again. So, but we learn an important fact that these metals can have a devastating effect on these dark multiverse beings. And that's pretty much the one positive that we take away from this whole story, and that they, you know, they will follow up on and use in Metal Number 3, because after that, the all of the Dark Knights boom tube in from right at the end where they beat the hell out of Cyborg in the Murder Machine single issue. And basically everyone except I think Damian and Nightwing are captured and put on this tower, this machine that Nightwing was having these visions about. It is now front and center right here. That is what was at the heart of the labyrinth. And it is literally a battery being powered by like every superhero and villain they can capture. And that is what is going to be used to submerge our Earth, you know, the Prime Earth or whatever you want to call it, into darkness and into the dark multiverse so that all of these dark beings can thrive. And that's our super sweet ending.
Yeah.
So
a nice tidy ending, but a little open-ended as well for the bigger story.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
It was, I mean, you're not absolutely going to be missing anything, but I really felt like it wasn't a waste. It was a really solid tie-in issue, like no regrets reading it.
I agree. I was not quite sure what to expect when you handed these to me. As I said at the beginning, typically side stories, filler stories, they just kind of come off as just a schlocky attempt at gaining a few extra bucks from the reader. And I feel like this was, yes, absolutely that. They were definitely trying to, you know, make some dough, but at least it was an attempt with some style and some talent involved. And it ended up being a story that I feel like I would have sorely missed if I
just
didn't read it.
Cohesion, man. Like it was, it is very clear that all of it was planned and then everyone just followed the plan.
Yeah.
As far as like literally creating these issues, not what occurred within the issues.
Yeah.
And like I'm not going to say that that's an easy thing because I don't write stuff.
It's not easy, man.
But it is very much appreciated as a fan that they are able to execute this.
Yeah, it's very good.
So that's going to conclude this one, this guy right here. And we'll be back sooner or later with some more metal. But for now, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. And feel free to... Oh, boy. What's that website again?
RaymanDigitalMedia.com. Yeah.
Add us to your favorites. Leave us reviews. Bookmark things. You can find us on demand on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I have been Paul. He has been Michael. And you have been listening. Thanks.
Blah, 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 blah. All of that chit-chat's gonna get you hurt.
Oh, my God.